This is the August 8 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets. She's out of Ipswich, South Dakota. Chip Dellinger is here from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois. Kevin Van Trump from the Van Trump Report in Kansas City, Missouri. And Mike Zuzla, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand in its entirety all the time at willag.org, willag.org. Let's get a list of items that we should discuss for the day. Mike Zuzlo, I want to start with you, please.
Well, I'll go with what the clients have been asking the most this week ever since Monday's salvo of trade issues and currency issues, Todd. And they're wondering now, with the recovery in prices, whether we've got the demand bears finally exhausted at this point.
Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report.
Yeah, I would agree with Mike. I mean, trade talk is obviously tops on the list, and where we are with U.S. production, you know, harvested acres and yield.
Chip Nellinger, anything else to add?
Well, I think the elephant in the room is the acreage. We could probably talk about that for 2 hours and still not come up with the right answer. So that's the big one, the report coming. And obviously this dry weather is starting to be a real issue here in the Eastern Corn Belt.
And Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets.
Yeah, I think this is the time of year when crop conditions, and you mentioned the dry weather, and that's really the exciting stuff to talk about. And we wouldn't have to spend too much time on it, but just to talk about the dollar and the prospects for these outside markets probably affecting what's going on with these grain prices.
Well, since we have you spread across such a large geographic area, I think what I'd like to start with is what crop conditions are like, in your opinion, in your area. Elaine, you're in South Dakota. That was the rotten space to begin with at the beginning of the year. Has it remained that way?
No, not really. I mean, it sort of depends. It sort of depends where you're at. But I've been all across the Western Corn Belt in the past couple of weeks, and certainly the areas in the Missouri River Valley, there's still flooding and it's still really ugly. There's lots of areas, lots of pockets, even in eastern Iowa, where you've got the prevent planting, you're just driving down the road and you see, you know, grim fields that didn't get planted and just doesn't look very nice and not very happy to see. But there are also, you know, some soybean fields that look quite beautiful. And again, to go back to Iowa, the condition ratings for soybeans are actually better right now than they were in 2017 at this time. So I think on a nationwide basis, especially when you get over the Eastern Corn Belt, like the rest of these guys, it gets really ugly. But I certainly have seen some fields that have good yield prospects.
Now, I'm going to stay with you for just a second because you mentioned soybeans. Now, I traveled through Iowa and parts of the Dakotas on the 11th of July or thereabouts, and I thought that the crop, soybeans, looked like everything had been planted all, roughly speaking, at the same time, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Iowa, and the Dakotas, although our crop has not closed up.
Oh.
And Chip Nellinger talk about that in just a bit. But your crop apparently looks way better than ours.
Yeah, you know, it looks fine. But you mentioned the timing of it, and that is going to be really crucial when you look at how much is supposed to be blooming by now and isn't blooming by now. And then you start thinking, boy, this is going to be a real mess if there's any frost any time before Halloween. So just because it's green and, you know, nice looking now in the areas that haven't started to turn dry, in these places it is still green, you know, that still doesn't mean that we've got a crop.
Has it all canopied?
Yeah, generally, yeah. Everything I've seen, Nebraska, eastern South Dakota, most of Iowa, yeah, it's nice green canopied crop. Not blooming yet, not setting, you know, not doing what it should be doing at this point in time.
Chip Nellinger, you want to contrast with that one?
Yeah, I don't think I've seen a field in Illinois that is canopied and probably not going to in beans. I mean, it's hard to find a field that's north of knee-high. And I mean, it sounds like an exaggerative statement, but I mean, Todd, you've driven a lot, probably as much as I have. I don't think that that's an exaggeration. I mean, we got a problem on beans. Obviously, the demand and the China trade talks are really overshadowing that, but everyone seems to kind of be forgetting that, you know, these beans have an issue, and it's dry, and the corn is not in real great shape either. And I think part of it is, You forget about when it was planted, and you drive past a field of corn, and you're like, oh yeah, it's kind of getting that crispy brown, you know, mid-August look to it, and you're like, wait a minute, it was planted June 14th. It shouldn't look like that yet. And we're dry. And so I just think that it is, there's a long way to go for the finish line, and we're slowing down, not speeding up. So the race is going to get long here. And I think there's big issues out there that the market really is just not really thinking about right now because of the trade talks and the outside markets and the demand issues.
So Mike Zuzlow, I want to turn to you because you're in one of those places where they do plant a lot of soybeans in that northeastern corner of Kansas. How's the crop look?
I guess, and for the record, I think we were still number five in corn acreage plantings as of the last report, if I remember right. I know we certainly were on the March report, but I could take you to fields, and I have clients that have told me they could take me to fields that if they miss one more rain, it's going to be probably like 2012. And, you know, not to just confine it to northeast Kansas and northwest Missouri. I've got a very good client that is a top-notch producer south of South Bend near Winnemac, Indiana, and he puts on about 5 inches of water on his irrigated ground every year, and he's already hit that level at this point. So I could take you probably to fields that will be about 2012 status for both corn and beans, and maybe even worse than 2012 in beans if we miss another rain and stay this warm. I could probably take you to fields that are going to be yielding close to 2009 levels directly north of me if they catch a couple more rains. And based upon some of the ear counts and some of the ear pictures that I've been getting from up near St. Joe and Troy, Kansas, they got in on time, and it's an extremely strong looking crop right now. But that's the division of how stark it is. And I would say it's not just my area. I would say almost every area I work with, whether it's down by Effingham or whether it's up by Mankato, it sounds like you could find just about everything this year.
And Kevin Van Trump, anything to add to the discussion about what the crop conditions look like, or should we talk about acreage?
No, I just tell you, I ain't probably picked a good time to call. I've been on probably two dozen calls in the last week, Todd, with pretty significant fund traders and other guys that are out on some big private crop tours. And seems like everybody leaves the office a little bit more bullish, come home a little bit less bullish on the corn side of things. A lot of variability out there. Everybody's coming home more bullish on the bean side of things for sure. So probably similar to what Chip's saying, what Mike's saying as well. I mean, we're just a little bit uncertain. Everyone's really uncertain on how we finish this bean crop out. Like I said, I think they were leaving the offices in some of the bigger places, thinking that corn crop was going to be a little bit worse off than it was. But, you know, there are some areas that are seeing some, I think some of the early planted stuff are seeing some good production. So, yeah, similar in line with what you guys are saying.
And what do you think the acreage will look like on Monday morning?
Yeah, that's a wild guess there. I mean, that's everybody's, I mean, we are just seeing such extremes on that side of the equation as far as the bet. You know, I think we ultimately get down sub 80 million acres on harvested. I'm probably closer to 78 million. And, you know, I talked to guys that have traded 40 years, and we are so wide on and so much discrepancy amongst all of our estimates. It's just crazy. So I think it's a just complete crapshoot.
Elaine, how about you?
Yeah, I'd agree with those numbers. You know, you talk to folks who have satellite imagery or aerial imagery, and their estimates are south of 80 million acres. And also, you know, Bill Northey has been on the record telling Farm Journal that, you know, this August 12th prevented plant number that's going to come from the FSA, it's not going to be a final number because obviously folks were still filling out paperwork even into August. But Northey was saying that it's going to be at least 10 million acres. And that's to start with. So Monday's report is going to have that number included from FSA. And that's not an exact number, but that's his number, at least 10 million. And then you go from there. When you go into the September report, it'll keep changing.
Yeah, that's 10 million for everything, though. That's corn, soybeans,
right,
wheat, all crops. So here's the question. Did producers continue to plant corn? And how much did acreage, if they did, how much did acreage increase on intentions, relatively speaking? And did that come out of the bean side?
Well, speaking, you know, from a northern perspective, if you were in the really late planting window, you weren't still planting corn, because I'll go back to my comment about not having a frost before Halloween. This is a real concern. You know, you can't you can't push some of these crops really late. So I think most of the late planted acres probably did go to beans, at least in my area. But, you know, Chip and those guys could maybe weigh in for the Eastern Corn Belt.
Todd, I think that is what it comes down to. And I don't know. I mean, I can understand the argument. We had a price rally, into the first part of June there. I don't know. I had a few producers kind of right around here between, say, Lincoln and Morton, maybe not quite as hit as hard with those rains, that did switch a couple fields, nothing major. But then that's offset by guys that literally took, 30-35% prevent plant on corn, up in the northern third of Illinois. And this is good. I mean, this is 230 plus bushel ground. So I think that's the question. We didn't, as our client base, we didn't pick up a massive shift of additional corn acres. There was some. I don't think it was as much as what the Bears argue. Maybe we'll find out more Monday. Maybe we won't. I'm not sure about that.
I guess we will have to depend on the survey or resurvey, Mike Suzzolo, to get a lot of those numbers and make sure that they're correct. Will USDA do a pretty good job with it, do you think?
I think they will because of the MFP and how coordinated they have been with the structure of the payouts and the FSA already knowing by county what they're going to be getting. I think it's probably two small points that could end up being important. Is I think the cover crops that were planted are going to show a dramatic increase, and I think that goes into corn. If I remember right, that may be put into the corn category, but that may decrease the overall prevent plant number because cover crops were being planted as late as last week for some of my clients in Illinois. I think the second, maybe more important point is acres are going to mean a lot less on the report, to me anyway, if we stay dry next week. I think that's really what I'm starting to try and hone in on is that, yeah, acres are an important part of production. I think Kevin's point about 80 million harvested on both corn and beans or even less is real. I'm right at 80 on both corn and beans harvested, but that number will mean a lot less to me if we stay dry next week because I've got many more clients this week calling me saying I'm one lost rain away from losing a lot of crop. And I talked to my colleagues in Chicago about that today. We're talking about right in the heart of where Chip is and on straight into LaSalle Street. That's an area that is going to get hurt badly from my understanding. And it's going to be a big deal next week if that European model is more right than the GFS. So I'm trying to balance that as well.
I will point everybody to an interview that I did with Lance Honig that's up on the website at willag.org now. Should be kind of at the top of the page there, previewing Monday's USDA reports and kind of getting an idea of what those numbers look like and answering a question that many on Twitter have asked because they made note that the FSA numbers will be released at the same time as the USDA crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Those numbers usually would come out at 2 o'clock central time in the afternoon rather than at 11 o'clock during the day. And Mr. Honig simply says they do talk to each other and they thought it was best that the numbers came out together because they will support one another. So that's where they are at this point. Anything else, Mike, to add?
No, I appreciate you clearing that up. That was my main point, was that I do think that they realize what's at stake here. And I think keep in mind, we are really close to an EPA decision on the minor or the smaller refiners as far as the RINs and being able to get the exclusions. And I think this all works into the calculus with the president, with Sonny Perdue, and with the USDA government union people that are, still trying to fight to keep some of their positions in Washington. I mean, it's a tough spot everybody's in right now. It does seem like they're trying to work more together, though.
And so what do producers do? Do we just wait out the Monday report and then move on from there? Anybody got ideas about what a producer can or should do at this point? Anything different?
Well, and I guess I'm more interested in some of these broker folks, if they've seen much appetite from farmer clients going long, going into the report. I had some folks ask me about that today, and I always hesitate. I always hate to advise farmers to go long because they're already long in the cash market most likely, but I don't know if the options market is really suggesting that that's a good strategy, but I honestly don't have a very good brokerage opinion about that, so I'm curious about the other guests.
Well, they've been doubling down all season long. They doubled down early in the year on long crops, so are they asking again, Chip?
Yeah, I mean, that is a fear that I have. The vast majority of people, farmers, even the public, myself included, are bullish. And that scares me a little bit just because of the, you know, the majority is typically wrong, not from a conspiracy theory standpoint, but it's just the way that the market, hurts the most amount of people is makes the majority wrong. And so there are, in the back of my mind also, maybe this is the one year with all the wide variance of opinion. I mean, literally we're 10 million acres apart from the low to the high from what people think as far as this acreage report goes on Monday, that maybe it is the one year that farmers are going, as the majority, are going to end up being right. I think that is a possibility because what is easy to focus on is the trade war and demand, and it's not good. But you take 4, 5, 6 million acres out of corn and eventually drop 3, 4, 5 bushels out of it, and you quickly erase close to a billion bushels out of the carryout. And so that's going to swallow up any reduced demand. So, to your point, I think that the general public, the small spec, the farmer, myself included, I'll put myself in there, is bullish corn and beans both. I'm fearful, though, that it's going to take a while to figure out what's out there from a yield perspective, and I'm very fearful that we're going to have more questions than answers on the acreage issue once Monday's over.
Kevin, on the flip side of that bullish sentiment, the market has been bearish, and it's been on the demand structure and consumption. Should it remain that way?
Well, I think your overall tilt, you know, you don't have any of the funds really heavily aligned on the bullish side of the bandwagon, so to speak. Everybody's got a negative macro picture in their mind. The strength of the dollar has been one of the biggest headwinds. And we're setting up and trying to position our funds and things of that nature to try and be long corn and buying beans. I bought beans on the break, sub 865, just a very small dip to toe in the water. Been pretty long corn from back in early May. We just think you're going to see a turn, I think probably maybe into 2020. I don't know. I'm like Chip. I don't know if it happens right here. We were talking on the phone. We think D's corn, you could maybe break it down to 380 if you want to get aggressive on it on some type of crazy number like FC Stone or Informa threw out or something like that. But we're kind of positioning and trying to position for a little bit of a macro shift. I think they're going to try and put some pressure on this dollar, hopefully, eventually. And maybe if we do ink some type of trade deal, we think – you're going to see some money start to flow over out of the equity side, hopefully back into the commodity side a little bit. We've just been undervalued, and we think guys will want to take some of that big money that's been made on the equity side, at least some of the funds, and get long in the commodity space. So I think that's how we're trying to position. I think you've got the tailwind of the crop being extremely questionable right now that also gives you a good advantage at these prices. Beans sub $9, corn close to $4. I mean, the downside feels fairly limited, Todd. I think some of the other guys will say the same. With the macro space, like Michael talked, the macros being so negative and the macro landscape just really not enticing a lot of fund activity right now. So I like being bullish.
Kevin, I want to ask you a follow-up on that. What if we do manage to bring the dollar down in value, but at the same time we don't get a deal with China? What happens?
Well, I think that's going to at least what we're hearing from our sources is that Trump's going to try and ink some type of ancillary side deal that, China's going to step in and still be a buyer of, we believe China wants to be a buyer of U.S. corn, maybe not so much U.S. beans in a big way. We think they want to shift the bean buying over to South America on a longer term scale. I mean, they'll still buy beans from the U.S., obviously, but we think eventually they want to buy corn, they want to ship it into the South, and like we said, build ethanol plants up to the north and get away from railing the corn down. So makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. I think they ink some type of side deal if China just digs in and doesn't want to do anything. We still believe there's going to be, and they realize and recognize, in our opinion, that they're going to need U.S. Agriculture at some point. So I think that hurdle gets overcome. I think it gets overcome ahead of the election. And you know, and like I said, I think into 2020, there could be a pretty big bullish ag commodity story. So, you know, cotton prices, well, there's just a lot of opportunity, it seems like, to position yourself. You know, don't, I wouldn't say get aggressive or out over the tips of your skis, but because certainly they could put more downside pressure on things. But we like positioning that way right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same mindset, Todd, with the not getting out over your skis, especially in the soybeans. I think one thing that continues to really plague me is the African swine fever, and it's not going away in China. In fact, one of my colleagues and contacts just returned, his friend just returned, who's been in the hog business over there since the 1990s, and it sounds like it's actually going the opposite direction, that the bigger numbers that Rabobank and FC Stone had put out many, many months ago about the 50% of the herd being hit with it. That may not be the top end number at this stage of the game. And I'll be writing more about that at the end of this week to clients and subscribers. So I would stick to the feed grains. I think Kevin is right on when it comes to the dollar, that the market wants to take it lower. I think President Trump wants a weaker dollar policy to fight China in the trade side. And I think we saw that very bluntly this week. The problem is that China just nationalized their third bank since May. And President Xi has got a lot of pressure on him, from my understanding, right now from inside of China. And I think that would really drive the dollar back towards a safe haven currency. So just be careful about being long at this stage of the game. But I'm certainly not hedging here, to answer Elaine's question. No hedges at these price levels. You give me 465 plus D's corn, you give me 965 no beans, I'll turn back into a hedger. But I don't feel like the risk is good enough, especially after going through Monday, to hedge right here.
Any other thoughts, Elaine Cub? The U.S. dollar was on your list.
Yeah, and part of the reason why it has been as strong as it is, you know, as you mentioned, as a safe haven. But also, I think there is risk that the dollar could get stronger. And this will kind of take us down a conspiracy theory sort of path. But China this week demonstrated its willingness to play with its own currency and take it down below 7 U.S. dollars per yuan, which I think suggests that maybe someday down the road they could potentially be willing to start selling off their large positions of U.S. treasuries. In which case, you know, anything the Fed wants to do about interest rates would be overwhelmed by the market itself. So, you know, there's what is good for farmers, there's what is good for the U.S. economy, but there's the market itself, which I think could make the dollar continue to be strong, or at least that's one of the reasons why the dollar has been as strong as it is. So I'm pretty scared about that as a bearish headwind on the commodity.
Let's turn our attention to the other report that'll come out on Monday, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. As we begin to wrap up our discussion here, Chip, do you expect many changes in those numbers?
Well, I think you can argue that demand probably needs to come a little bit lower, you know, in corn and beans both, especially from an export standpoint. I don't think it's going to be, you know, a massive cut. That's the thing about the supply and demand side of it. The supply side, you can have big, big cuts, whether that's an acreage cut or a yield cut. Demand, typically, you know, they just kind of measure out. Even if corn demand needs to go down 200 million, they usually don't do it all in one month. They ease into it over several months. So I don't think there needs to be any major revisions, but I would expect that corn and bean demand come down a little bit, you know, probably from both an old crop perspective and maybe even a little bit on the new crop. But I think it's going to be you know, minute compared to the potential supply side changes.
Anything from you, Elaine? And I guess I'm thinking maybe about the ethanol numbers.
Yeah, just that at these price levels and with the economy, let's say the retail consumer space being what it is right now, which is not super robust, it's not to such a degree that we could have fuel prices, you know, be much more profitable for the ethanol space without getting severe pushback from consumers. So I think the ethanol side is more vulnerable than any of the other sectors in that corn supply and demand table.
Mike or Kevin, do you want to answer this question, or shall we move on to our final thoughts for the day?
Yeah, no, the ethanol side of things, I mean, all of our, you know, our CEOs and the plants that I'm invested in and the ethanol plants we have, everybody's struggling. I mean, the industry's struggling. We've had no exports to China, like I think Ag Resource talked about the other day. I mean, we haven't had a shipment or cargo of ethanol to China since March of 18. And, you know, DDGs, no DDG movement. And export was really where our growth was in 16 and 17 and into 18. Is export growth is where we were gaining our traction on the in the ethanol industry. So we've had somewhat stagnant domestic growth, and exports were supposed to be what carried us at a lot of plants, and really hasn't come to fruition. We keep hearing that there's going to be some potential, but just haven't played out. So we're seeing a lot of ethanol plants are kind of having to spin and pivot and take on some and look for businesses in different ways and different means and trying to do some different things in their facilities. So yeah, some of the smaller plants that have been maybe having some of the older equipment, some of the other things, they're getting squeezed a little bit here. So it's definitely worrisome.
Let's wrap this up now. We'll start with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Any final comment for the afternoon?
I do think we saw the demand bear start to work away from his very strong position at this stage of the game. And so I think we are probably at a stage, especially if weather stays dry, that you're probably going to need to feed that demand bear. And whether USDA does that by not cutting supplies enough is probably the number one issue that I'll be looking at going into Monday's numbers, Todd, because USDA has been the gatekeeper on the supply side. And I think if you want to get a higher gross revenue per acre, the demand side is up to the dollar and the funds and the macro side. The supply side is really up to Mother Nature and USDA.
Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets, your final thought.
Yeah, it's rare that I would straight out say that I'm bullish or bearish, but I am feeling bullish going into Monday because I think this is an opportunity for these supply and demand tables, specifically the supply side of it, to reflect reality out here in the Corn Belt that they don't currently reflect reality. And I think there's an opportunity here for that to get shown to the market.
Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing.
Yeah, I would agree with what Mike and Elaine have both said. I think that that's no place to panic. I think the market is highly focused on the trade war with China and the demand issues, which are arguably are there. However, you know, I think like Elaine said, you know, you could just with a snap of a finger really reduce a lot of supply. On top of that, the market really isn't even thinking about or realizing the issues we have out in the field right now with the potential for corn and bean yields to come lower, maybe not on the August report, but over time going into the final report. So no time to panic, but you do have to have a plan. And, again, I think that we're going to see a lot of fireworks come Monday. If we're on the trend of a much lower cut in acres, then this thing could still be interesting and you could have not been anywhere near the highs yet. But it really is going to come down to the acreage issue. And that's unfortunately, we have to hold out a little bit of hope that the USDA gives us a bullish number there. I think it's very important.
And finally, Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report.
Yeah, Todd, I'll give you a couple of things. I remember an old boy told me when I first showed up at the Chicago Board of Trade way back when, he said, "Son, this is not a team sport." And I listened to all of us and we're all bullish. And I'm like Chip, it just makes me cringe a bit when I know we're all aligned wanting to be bullish here. I'm bullish. I'm buying the break. If the USDA comes out with a wild pitch or something like that, I'm going to buy the break and I'll probably keep buying the break for a while longer. My goal is, like I said, late 2019, early 2020. So we're really positioning for something longer term. I can't stress enough that, you know, take small bites. You know, there's an old saying that we always said, you know, I bought the first break, I bought the second break, and I was the third break. So just be careful. And Mike and Chip, and Elaine, you guys know the customers get all bowled up. Pace yourself a little bit. Pace yourself. And I think longer term things are going to look good. So, Todd, appreciate you having me on.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of our program online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report out of Kansas City, Missouri, Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Atchison, Kansas, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, and Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets in Ipswich, South Dakota. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.